from stpetecatalyst.com.
Welcome to the Local Marketing Trends Podcast, where you'll find regular insights on what's happening in the world of local marketing from two of the brightest and occasionally irreverent minds in the industry, Corey Elliott and Gordon Burrell. Today's show is sponsored by Site Impact, the experts in email marketing. And now, here's your hosts, Gordon and Corey.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to our podcast, and welcome back to Corey. We missed you on the last one. Where you been?
Oh, thank you very much. I've been working on a top secret project. Actually, it's really exciting. We're going to hear more about it at the end of the year.
Top secret. Cool. Yeah. Well, I'm excited about this particular podcast because of the interview we've got with Clark Gilbert. We're going to get to that very quickly, but we did want to talk about disruption to kind of set it up. Corey, you've got this idea about the next wave. We've had lots of different waves from Google and search engines in the 2000s and then Facebook and social media currently, and the next one coming up.
And I can't pronounce it. Amazonification, maybe?
Amazonification.
Yeah, it's impacting everything, everywhere we go. And it is affecting small businesses and local businesses
This is just, I think, an amazing disruption that I don't think many people are realizing. Amazon had $3 billion in ad revenue last year, forecast to have, $30 billion or more in a couple of years. There's a whole team mobilizing to help local businesses learn how to advertise their goods and get their stuff set up on Amazon. What happens to mom and pop shops?
I don't know. I'm scared to death because do you realize that one out of two people, 48% of the U.S., has bought something from Amazon the past 3 months?
I have.
Yeah, and I have too. I live in Williamsburg, Virginia, bought a case for my phone. It arrived less than 24 hours.
That is just amazing. We seem to have packages coming every week to the house. And what does that do to local businesses? So we've got this great disruption occurring, and we've got an interview coming up with Clark Gilbert that I think is just going to be really fascinating. Clark has studied the media industry with me back when he was at Harvard's Entrepreneurial Unit almost 20 years ago, and then jumped in and became CEO of Deseret Media and showed the industry how to do it. And we've got a great interview coming up with him. He's going to talk about what he thinks the future of media looks like. Mm-hmm. And I got to set you up here. It's not good. So right after this, we'll have the interview with Clark.
We're going to do something phenomenal for listeners just to get them acquainted with our sponsor, Site Impact. They're out to prove how powerful email marketing can be. So here's the deal. I want you to text somebody, and I'm going to give you their cell phone number in about 30 seconds. So get ready to jot it down. You're going to want this. Trust me, it's not a gimmick. So here's the deal. How'd you like more opt-ins for your daily email newsletter? Or how'd you like to help a dealership sell some cars? Or maybe get people to sign up for a furnace tune-up? All you have to do is pick the target audience. Higher-income homeowners with good credit living within 20 miles of Duluth. And Site Impact will send 50,000 targeted emails for you to that particular target for free. 50,000 for free. If you get a mere 1% response rate, that's 500 leads. All you have to do is text. Here's the number, 561-685-8991, and say, tell me more. Give you the number one more time. And you can find the number at the end of the description of this podcast on our website if you want to go back there and look. 561-685-8991. Give Site Impact a test drive. You're going to love this.
Okay, everybody, I've got a really great interview. I'm so excited about this interview. With me is my old friend, Clark Gilbert. Clark, thank you for joining us.
It's great to be with you, Gordon. I'm looking forward to it.
Clark heads up BYU Pathways. I'm going to ask him to talk about that in just a moment. But Clark and I go way back into the early 2000s when he and I intersected doing a joint applied, basically, research project while Clark was at Harvard's entrepreneurial unit on disruptive innovation in media companies. That goes a long way back. But Clark, tell us a little bit about first BYU Pathways and what you're doing there.
You know, I spent so much time looking at disruption across different industries, but at my core, I've always been an educator, and I was when I was running Deseret Digital Media, after 5 years into that, I was asked to come back to academia and be president of BYU Idaho, which is a teaching-focused university with about 35,000 students. We had a disruptive venture inside the university set up through a separate division called Pathway. And eventually the number of online students in the BYU Pathway program exceeded the number of students on campus. And our board decided to spin it out as a separate division, asked me to leave my previous institution and become its new president. Today we have about 50,000 students in over 100 countries. As online learners focused on students who wouldn't otherwise be able to afford or have access to education.
Yeah. Wow, that is just amazing. And internally, that is disruptive to Brigham Young. So tell us how you're applying your understanding of this disruption within the company and making it work.
You know, we have a separate division. We spun it out of the university, made it an independent organization with the president reporting separately to the our Board of Education. I have a line operating team and vice president for that all kind of come from more non-traditional educational backgrounds. One of my vice presidents is a Harvard MBA who was an ed tech CEO. Another one ran Laureate Brazil. Another one ran, a major branch of a non-traditional continuing education organization. So they're built for what we're doing. They all kind of have this disruptive DNA to them, and they're all very mission driven. Everyone here, our mission is to help students who couldn't otherwise afford education and help them believe they have more potential than they thought, and provide them a very accessible and affordable education, and it's just created tremendous growth all across the world.
That's fantastic. Let me jump to the obvious question, and that is you've said separate and a number of times. And if you go back several years ago when you and I were involved in the media industry, we were pushing for separate operations. And you're talking about separate operations and separate people. For the most part, what I see in media are they appoint somebody who already knows about whatever their product is, whether it's newspaper, TV, or radio, and that person is in charge of digital. So it's not separate. It's the same. So a few weeks ago, someone said to me, what about all the desk pounding that you and Clark did back in the 2000s about creating completely separate operations? Everybody seems to have abandoned that, Clark, and integrated digital into their existing organizational structures. Did we miscalculate? Was it just too hard to run a separate company? Tell me your thoughts on that.
It is hard to run a separate company, but I think it goes back to an organizing question. Do you want to have a marginal exposure to the digital world, or do you want to win? And, we just don't see anywhere, whether it's TV, newspaper, radio, or other industries, even in higher education, in the space I plan for the online universities, they are all startups or separately structured divisions of universities. Every university who tries to do it through their traditional dean and department structure are struggling. And people who've created a separate dedicated team to do it are having lots of success. And that, Gordon, it's like a physics principle. It's, people say, oh, well, your theory says this. Well, theory gets a bad name sometimes because it sounds theoretical or overly esoteric or academic. But a good theory helps you predict in the absence of data. I don't need to know that if I drop a 50-pound weight, it's going to fall and land on my foot. I'll trust the theory and not do it. And, the theory is built around fundamental differences in operating structures and operating logic. And if you're going to run it through your old mental model in the same organization, just empirically, it's not a matter of opinion or philosophy, empirically, you're not going to win.
So now that you've had 5 years, it's been almost 5 years since you've left Deseret Media as a CEO of a TV, newspaper, separate digital entity. Tell me if you're more optimistic or less optimistic about the fate of these traditional media companies. When we're talking specifically like Gannett, McClatchy, Nexstar, Sinclair, iHeart, not that you have to name them, but in general, not the fate of print or broadcast media, but the likely path ahead of the companies that own them.
Yeah, you know, I hate to say it, Gordon, I'm far less optimistic. I think the downside of disruptions come faster than many people thought. And the willingness for people to have integrity to creating a new venture or a new division built for the future is just waning. And I just don't see a lot of people who I'm confident in. And, you know, there are people who've regrouped and pulled in and they'll have a kind of a survivor strategy, fine. But, you know, I would be really hard pressed to ever say I'm optimistic about that. And so, you know, I do think there were a few companies who had a good vision and were committed to doing things disruptively, but speaking on the industry as a whole, not only have I seen the force of disruption move forward unabetted, I just don't see a lot of leadership remaining across the industry with people who really have a digital first mindset and an ability to really lead in this space.
You know, the industry, I think, could really use your insights right now. They're in the same position newspapers were. And I'm going to ask you a really tough question.
Yeah.
They're in the same position that newspapers were, particularly in radio, just a few dozen years ago. They're finally awakening to the fact that they've got an aging listening audience and their core product is declining, yet there's this new audience potential in digital platforms. So can you help them avoid the mistake of the newspaper industry? If you were the CEO of iHeartRadio, which owns 848 radio stations, it's got a market cap of about $1 billion. It's just out of bankruptcy, fresh start. Clark, what would you do to mold iHeart into the company of the future?
You know, you took this in a direction I wasn't prepared for. You know, I think there's two questions. One is, you know, what is the scale of the organization? And two, is there leadership, visionary leadership there and a commitment to them? I'm gonna reply really in a nuanced way, Gordon, and I hope you'll tease this out with me a little bit. But for most of the industry, even though I'm the disruption guy and set up a separate division, my actual confidence that many of these radio companies have both the scale and the managerial commitment and digital talent base to do this is not high. And in that case, some part of me says maybe the, you know, value maximizing position is, you know, strengthen and regroup in the core and do marginal incremental digital investments. That's not what I would do, but if I was over a $1 billion radio franchise and I had a big digital team with good experience and an organizational commitment, but it's actually my lack of belief that radio is going to attract strong digital talent and that there's enough scale and enough managerial commitment to do what needs to be done, because this is not if you're not willing to do that and you don't have some reasonable scale and you don't have access to some real digital talent, you know, some part of me wonders, just watching all of the recoiling I see happening in newspapers, that maybe they ought to, unless you're willing to make those big commitments, not only investment-wise, but organizationally, maybe they're better off as a whole to hold their ground and hunker down and really view digital disruption as more of an incremental extension of your core brand than a reinvention opportunity.
I think many of them are, and it applies not only to radio, but as you said, to any other type of medium, TV and cable companies and even outdoor companies, all of them trying to tackle digital internally with internal resources. Clark, this has been terrific. Thank you for sharing your insights and your time with us. Anything else you'd like to say? Any other observations you've had since you've kind of been out of the hot seat over the past 5 years?
Yeah, you know, I'll just say two quick things. One is, the further I've been away from the industry, the more I realize not only how important separation is, but how persistent these worldviews are. You know, I see managers where even in their own division, it's clear, even in their own company, it's clear the digital division now surpasses the legacy asset. They still think it should have been tucked under them. I mean, here, 18 years into the transformation of the industry, those worldviews just hold on. They are stubborn and hard to change. And, you know, it makes me both more committed to separate structures and little, you know, less optimistic about the industry's future. The second thing is, Gordon, I just refer this to anyone who's interested. After I had been away from the industry for a couple of years, I did reflect back on the whole idea of dual transformation and what are some of the pitfalls and some of the challenges. And I wrote that up in a book called Dual Transformation. It's not just focused on the media industry. It looks at education and other industries. But for anyone who's really serious about it, you know, it might just be a resource, both a buyer beware and here's the upside awaits you kind of combined. But, you know, there is tremendous opportunity, but boy, there's a lot of risk as well.
Great. Clark, thank you for your time. Dual Transformation, look that up on Amazon. We'll provide a link for it a little bit later so people can take a look at it. This has been great. Thanks for your insights. Thanks for everything that you've done for the industry and you continue to do at BYU Pathway. So, Clark, thanks for being our guest.
Great to be with you, Gordon. Appreciate all you do.
Mr. Disruption, you and him, huh?
Oh, man. There's not good news there, I think, for the industry, although I kind of understand where he's coming from, basically saying if I were in Bob Pittman's shoes, say, at iHeart, gosh, you know, you're strapped with some severe financial issues, renegotiating, you know, $100 million or more in debt. You have to pay attention to other issues.
You know, speaking of other issues, one thing I got to bring up to you, your idea about separate teams, we keep going back and forth on this, and I don't know if I buy it anymore.
Why is that?
Because it's still a product-focused thing. In other words, if you're going to split something on between traditional media and digital media, that's still forcing you to think product first, right? Because that's how you've split the entire team. You guys sell this product, we sell this product. Nobody's thinking about marketing.
I don't think so. No, I think it's different. I think you have a legacy group that sells probably a set of products. They might sell events. They might sell sponsorships. They might sell radio advertising or newspaper advertising or whatever. And they have a core set way of doing business that's set to that business model with mm-hmm. a set profitability. Digital over here can be the digital assets or digital products. And it could be a whole set of them that looks a lot like what you find in traditional media, but has different profit margins, different, it goes after a different customer base. Just to give you an example of where it works, take a look at Nexstar. Nexstar had $107 million in revenue last year from its core sales of digital into its, by its television sellers. And then it had a separate unit, Nexstar Interactive, did at $157 million. So they're doing more. So they're doing it. Town Square is the same thing. We've talked about this a number of times. Town Square this year, I believe, will have more revenue from Town Square Interactive, completely separate unit. You visited it than the Town Square radio sales rep. So what do you say about that?
I agree with you, but I'm saying it's still product-based. Everything you just said, we divided on product. My suggestion is nobody's thinking about the overall arching marketing that local businesses say they want from whoever is selling them stuff. We want the overall plan, how all this stuff fits together. And if you're focused on just the digital, that's what you're going to be focused on.
I think you're right. I think maybe an example might be HubSpot that has sort of tackled that. And they'll say, hey, we'll handle everything for you. Mostly what they'll do is digital, but they'll do all kinds of marketing. So it's a disruptor, I guess, to the agency model itself. But anyway, Corey, thanks for joining me. And thanks for joining us. We hope you found this one to be very interesting. And don't forget our sponsor, Site Impact. Please do text them at the number we gave you. Thanks. Have a great day. Thanks, Corey.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Local Marketing Trends Podcast, sponsored by Site Impact. If you have submissions for something you'd like Corey or Gordon to discuss, or if you'd like to be a guest on the show, email the hosts at podcast@borrellassociates.com and let them know. Thanks for listening, and remember, market well.